Welcome to part two of my conversation with dynamic duo Mike McVicker and Katie Levy, co-founders of Gander, a design studio based in Brooklyn, New York, that has managed to channel the soul and substance of their designers with that of the products they promote and brand in order to make some of the most irresistible brand identities on the market right now. Just 5 minutes in a conversation with these two make it obvious why they work so well together, why they're able to be so creative, and why they're able to attract so many talented designers and brands of products that are seeking something different, something original, and something with that soul and substance. I'm not going to talk too much here because there's just far too much fun to be had in our conversation that we had about a month ago almost. So I'm just going to lead you to my right here to this episode that is waiting for you. And while you make your way, I'll remind you that this episode is sponsored by Crooked Path Forge. Crookedpathforge.org is a place you can go to buy beautifully handcrafted custom blades, axes, various metalworks, apparently risque blacksmithing calendars. I mean, You got to go there yourself to see. There are also workshops classes available for purchase. And if you use FindAway's special promo code FINDAHAMMER, you will get 10% off those products. So jump on it and enjoy. In the meantime, jump back into our conversation with Katie Levy and Mike McVicker. You will thank me later. Thanks for finding your way here today. Enjoy.
It's very weird thing to be like considered a boss. At one point we had a team of 12 people, which is not like a massive team, but there are 10 other people's livelihoods that we're quote unquote in charge of. And it kind of seems silly that me, little Michael Scott, is the one that's, that's making all the choices. And like, that's why I still feel sometimes like, how did I end up here? Because like, I don't feel like I was going to school. I just, like, had this vision of we're going to go to this to New York City and we're going to start the craziest, coolest design studio. And, you know, it just feels like funny that we're the ones that have to make the choices sometimes, which I think it's deceptive. And creativity is oftentimes the result of making a million small choices rather than like one big one. Like, I'm going to do this. But yeah, anyways, I think it's kind of funny to be in the position we are sometimes.
Sure.
Sorry, I feel like I can ramble quite a bit.
I mean, it's a podcast, so.
Yeah,
it's like, and also I think this is one of the reasons why I love doing this so much now. It's an excuse for us to not, I don't want to use the word ramble, but I guess that's what we would use it, you know, what word we might use in a different context, but I like that.
Yeah.
I like getting into conversations with people where they know that I want to hear what you've got to say, and I want you to dig, and I want you to wonder and things like that. I want that, and I want to do it too.
Yeah.
I know this is do. Like a you're interviewing us or whatever, but like I'm kind of curious about this I guess we were calling it the running toward the danger or like the chasing or whatever. Do you feel like you or anyone you know is this kind of, this is like me totally categorizing the way I am is bad and like the way these other people are is good. But I'm just like, who in the world is just perfectly content with the life that they live? And they're just like, you know what? My job's great. My husband's great. Like, I've got a roof over my head. That's all good. Are you that way? Do you know anyone that way? Am I like alone and being just like, none of that matters. I got to do more things. What do you think? I'm curious.
I can think of some people who I perceive that way, you know, who they seem content to just kind of plod along. There are some of those people I think are sort of intentionally checked out You know, I think it might be a little bit of a safety thing. Like if I just keep my blinders on and keep going forward, you know, like one of these days it'll just like be lights out and I will have achieved it. And that sounds more judgmental than I really feel about it. I think some people are just more programmed that way. And again, I think it's all about safety and security. And then I think there are some people, I think there's a certain level of enlightenment that that brings you to a place of content. And I've experienced versions of that before. I remember when, this is an odd example because the one aspect of this goes directly against the whole point. But when Audrey and I first bought the house, we had to renovate right away because we found like a rotten header in the kitchen and we had to tear that out. And it turned, you know, we were going to do a couple small projects and instead it turned into like a huge project and we couldn't live in the house while we were doing it. And so this was during the pandemic. So for about 6 months, we lived with Audrey's parents, Susan and Dennis, and pretty much every day,
who
are the best, who are just wonderful. We lived with them, and pretty much every day, Dennis and I would wake up early and go to the house and work. And that was the whole day, every day, for a long time, was just wake up early, eat some breakfast, go work at the house, come back home, eat dinner, jump in the pool, or jump in the pool, eat dinner, go to bed, wake up. And it was like the same thing over and over. And so I became very content all of a sudden with this cycle of like, oh my gosh, I love this. I wake up, I like go and work, I'm seeing progress on a thing, and I'm tired at the end of the day, and then I jump in a pool, and I come out, and I drink a beer, and have dinner, and like, I love Dennis and Susan and I love Audrey and we get this existence. It was really fun. But at the same time, like we were working towards something. We weren't content with the way the house was. We had to remake this house because we wanted more. And eventually that got old. You know, eventually I was like, you know, I don't want to do this. My hands hurt, you know, my back hurts, my, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I catch myself like those are the most uncomfortable times for me. In this version of life that I've got is sitting in this house and knowing that it's wonderful and we're lucky to have it and thinking like, oh God, this place is so great, but it would be so much better if I had one extra room.
Yeah.
Or if we could just get this light replaced or if we could just get the windows replaced or, and like those moments, I really resist. I try to stop myself from going down that spiral. And instead just think, I'm pretty good right now. I'm living better than like 90% of mankind has ever lived in this pretty reasonable little cool house.
Yeah.
I think that there's supposed to be a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's supposed to be easy. It's that give and take. And that's why, I mean, I think it's good that Katie, you're like recognizing this. Well, I got to stop sometimes and be grateful. I got to stop sometimes and take stock because I think that's what the flow is supposed to be. I'm pushing. And now I'm enjoying. And now pushing, enjoying.
I make the comment all the time that like, I kind of want to just quit my job and go mow lawns. Like Katie, I've probably made that joke or like comment a million times.
Yeah.
Like sometimes like it's just easier to imagine a job where I'm mowing the lawn and I know that lawn is done. I did 5 lawns today and they were done when they were done and I can go home and drink a beer and jump in the pool and, you know, hang out with
Dennis
and Susan, and like,
hell yeah.
In this fantasy, I'm living with Dennis and Susan.
Naturally,
but I think that like that is a falsity because the idea of like one day I'm just gonna go live off the grid. Those fantasies of like going into the middle of the forest and just, you know, off into the woods, and it's gonna be a blissful life in community with nature. But have you ever seen the TV show Alone?
No.
Alone. We've been watching a lot of Alone.
And let me tell you, solo survival in the woods is,
well, that's not what people mean when they say they want to go off the grid necessarily.
But, I mean,
I've dreamt of that. I have.
Yes, but like also the, you know, George, whatever his name, and the Oranges of Hieronymus, whatever, what's his name? The guy who wrote
Hieronymus Bosch.
Like when he was in living in Big Sur and like having all these kind of stressful scenarios of like where to get firewood and water. My point is, so basically alone are these people in the woods trying to survive as long as they can alone. And like, if you're, you know, stressed about your emails or your to-do list, you're also going to be stressed about when I got to boil my water. I got to go find a squirrel to kill, some fish to catch, and my fishnet's broken. And like, I think no matter where you are, you just have to be content with whatever process or to-do list you can then accumulate. Even if you're like owning a small farm or growing an organic corn in the country, you're going to have stress. You're going to have, it's just question is it the type of stress that you want?
Certainly.
Yeah.
No, I think that's right on. I think that is actually part of my fantasy, is trading stress. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'd like to trade. Mm-hmm. I think that I want to trade the stress of answering emails and answering, you know, texts, or being like contacted all the time. And when it has to do with the mundane, you know, like if I have to answer an email because somebody needs me to, you know, check a box so that they can process some bureaucratic bullshit thing. Like, I think that's part of the emptiness that we feel in our society, and like the sort of stress that we have is meeting these requirements that don't really feel important, you know, don't really feel meaningful, as opposed to like, if I don't fix my net, I don't eat tonight, or that sort of stress, while way higher stakes, I don't feel as though I would avoid that work. Mm-hmm. If I knew if I don't fix my fishing net, I'm not going to get my dinner tonight, I'm going to get up and do it. But when it comes to like figuring out how to use a different recording program so that I can do a podcast with my friends, I can avoid that for like 2 weeks. You know? I can, just because I'm like, I don't think I, you know. So.
Well, I think it's interesting to talk about the things that you avoid in life and why.
Right.
And there was like a really interesting, we've told you about the Dharma punks, the kind of like Buddhist pastor guy.
But we should promote it here. If anyone's in New York City and wants to join a Buddhist group that is run by a punk rock, I think he calls himself
Atheist Jew
Buddhist. He teaches about Buddhist psychology, and it's a really cool group. It's a, what is it called? A Sangha? If you're looking for a Sangha in New York City, it's a...
Cool.
Or we really just listen in on the talks on
Tuesdays.
But
they also meet in person, and I've been to one of their retreats.
They do retreats and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think one of the talks that he did was kind of like about that, taking stock of the things that you avoid in life and like trying to just ponder about it, kind of think back to like maybe your upbringing and like why that might be. I really avoid life administrative things like... making a dentist appointment, paying a parking ticket, medical bills, etc.
I agree.
I'm trying to think of something that I'm good at, like, oh, I handle that right away. You come home from grocery shopping, I clean the fridge fully. I take everything out, I clean the fridge, and then I neatly organize everything that comes back into the fridge. I don't think those are really comparable. Okay, maybe we're the same person.
Here's another thing. Here's my question. When you buy vegetables from the grocery store, do you wash them before you put them in the fridge?
Oh, shoot. No.
I was just thinking about that the other day.
I do it with kale.
Yeah, me too.
Because it otherwise will get dry and wilty.
I think there are some vegetables where you shouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited to listen back to this episode and
see what you cut out.
No.
Oh. Like that whole conversation.
See all the bullshit that we cut out. No, like a to-do list, because that's something we need to add to our to-do list.
Nah.
I'm just joking. The idea of like washing our vegetables. Oh, yeah, we need to do that. Fuck yeah.
But he mentioned kind of like, oh, like I was noticing like how I have, I think I have like a lot of, I avoid a lot of financial related things.
Me too.
And I'm like, why is that? What happened?
I have a suggestion. I know why.
Oh.
I have all the answers, actually.
I'm here for it.
Go on. This is the space.
I'd like to offer one hypothesis, is that I think you are both of you share this trait, which is I think you both are very present people. I think you're very engaged, present people. And I think things like traffic tickets.
You're like, well, that happened last week.
Taxes.
I'm not paying that.
But that has a very little standing on what I need or want or will do in the future, unless they take away my car because I don't, my driver's license because I don't pay the ticket. Or it has very little impact on me right now. And it's not going to impede it has zero standing in that. Like your food, you got to eat that real soon, and you can see a tangible thing in front of you that you're going to have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that like other things are like out of sight, out of mind, my man.
Yeah,
I do. I think you're onto something there. As you know, I think I find myself avoiding things like that because I don't even find myself avoiding them. I realize later that I avoided it because if I'm not there, I don't want to go there. You know, if I'm not, I feel such great reward from sort of going with what my momentum is. And my momentum is never like, I'm going to go check on our savings accounts or I'm like, what should we be investing in?
I never check my account. It's so bad.
Yeah. Me neither.
Because I feel like I grew up with my dad being like, and this is how you balance a checkbook. And like, it was very emphasized. Maybe that's it. Maybe I've just uncovered it, that I was just like, forget about that. Like once I'm an adult, I'm like, I am never checking my account again.
So fuck you, dad.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, my parents definitely taught me that, but I also was raised with I don't mean to put this solely on my parents, but I came out of my childhood with a very strict, just don't spend money.
Yeah.
Mindset, you know? And so that's one of the reasons why Audrey and I are a great pair. I mean, we piss each other off something fierce sometimes, but we really complement each other in the idea that she is such a planner and she's such a, you know, she tackles so many things like financial things for us, where she's got a savings account for our house, a savings account for car stuff, a savings account for, you know, you name it. If there's a category, she's got an account for it, and she puts a little bit in every month, and she's, you know, divvying things up and planning for this and planning for that. Yeah. I had like a checking account and a savings account, and I just put as much as I could in the savings account all the time until I desperately needed something, and then I take it out. And otherwise, the only thing I ever spent money on was like going out to eat. And
I am you know, the you guys same. Are so, we're the y'all exact.
Y'all
person.
The same people. Yeah. Y'all the same people.
Y'all same people. That's a fourth accent.
Y'all,
right there.
Y'all are the same people. Y'all don't even see it. You don't even see it, but you're the same people.
We got one more left, and I am positive we'll get it. We cannot end this conversation. It is the only thread we've got through this whole interview.
It's the only thing.
You promised me five. I need five.
Y'all are the same people.
Well,
I mean, I feel like, yeah,
I have a thought on it.
Yeah, please. I want you to.
So, I have, like I said, I have the answers, and that is something that I need to feel, and I need to communicate. No, I think it's, and it just like left my brain. It's just like,
that was awesome to watch. Your eyes just went like blank.
Because
I'm also very organized. I'm just curious, because the multi-savings accounts thing, I have to talk to Audrey about, because I'm like, I'm wondering why there's different ones, because ultimately all comes from the same place, but I appreciate, I'm all about lists and spreadsheets.
I have said the same thing before. There have been times where I'm like, oh, we should go out to eat. And she's like, well, we don't really have a lot of money in the going out to eat account. And like the next week we'll buy like, you know, a $500 couch. And I'll be like, I thought we didn't have any money. And she was like, well, that money was in the furniture fund.
Yeah.
You know, like, we don't have any money in the restaurant fund. I'd be like, well, why didn't we just take it out of the furniture fund? Like, I wanted that pizza, you know? And
yeah,
but that's interesting. She's good. Like, that means she has a budget probably, and she understands. She probably has like a baseline understanding of how you spend money and what your like monthly spending should be, which I have no clue about.
So same here. There's a concept in game theory. I knew we would get here. So glad this conversation took this turn.
This is all part of your game.
That's right. Yeah. There's a concept in game theory called machine building. Right. Machine building. Right. Right.
Right. Right? If you say right after something, then
right.
We all understand.
Right. It's actually one of my biggest pet peeves.
Me too.
Yeah. So there's a theory in game theory called machine building, right? And we all understand it, right? It happens in TED Talks quite a bit, right? No,
I'm editing out every right.
Just beep them out, God, actually.
Just beep them out. Anything that gets annoying, we're just going to beep out. It's the idea of like building a machine that will then propel you towards victory in that game. So you build we all played Civilization. What was that game? We had to build the firewood. Have workers that would chop wood, who would then get the wood that would then you could build a house out of, which then you could use to process coal, which then you could build a car out of, and then you're building a machine so that like every bit is working towards this bigger goal. And so you have to kind of build those pieces up. If you're just like living every day to like catch a single fish and chop a single piece of wood, you're never going to have a Rolls Royce, which is always the end result, what we're aiming for here. You have to have the ore so that you can forge the steel so that you can build your Rolls Royce out of steel. And so to start there, it's like the idea of trading up, right? Like you have a paperclip and you trade that for a muffin and you trade that muffin for a Rolls Royce.
And then the Rolls Royce for a thing of beans, magic beans.
And then you get it. So anyways, I think people in life are obviously reacting to whatever experience or trauma or fear they have. And I personally am a little bit more towards the idea of machine building. And I've also been a lot more into like gamification, gaming in general, like in recent years, and kind of been drawn towards that. Because I think it's like, oh, this is a solution towards having an outcome that you can predict. Yes. Because it is scary, it is dangerous to let that parking ticket go unpaid. Don't you see how that's going to be something that perpetuates and then gets out of control? And if you don't take care of it right now, you're going to perpetuate this issue. Like the idea of someone not taking care of the small things that will lead to future growth. And
interesting.
Yeah, I think it's like you're reacting out of fear. For me, so I react out of fear, right? I need to take care of that now. One, because I don't trust myself to remember to do it. And B is that like I'm mitigating future failure, which is not a great thing to think that I'm going to fail or whatever. I think a lot of times I wish I was living more in the moment, but I do think that's also why we compliment each other a lot, is that like I'm the one who's paying the parking ticket. I have the New York parking ticket paying app on my phone, and Katie has never seen.
Meanwhile, I have a new phone which I can barely use because of all my passwords that have been logged out. I can't use a single app. And I'm just like, I may as well have like a freaking flip phone at this point. I can never.
Yeah.
It's been a rough week for me.
Well, and it's a great illustration of two basic methods of living, in that, you know, one way is, Mike, I totally get that perspective. I'm picturing like, you know, making sure that every nut and bolt is tightened on the shuttle before you take off. You know, it's like, if it's loose, something's going to go wrong, you know, and that makes sense because when you're firing a rocket into space, you have a target to hit. You know, it's nobody's like, hey, let's just shoot this rocket into space and like where we end up, you know, where, that's where we go. You can't do that. You know, it's a huge endeavor. And so therefore, it's important that you hit the target. And so this method of living, it's enabling you to take some big risks because you're dotting every I and lowercase j and, you know, crossing all the T's. And on the other side of it, there's this sort of one that I feel more connected to, this chaotic form of living, which is like, yeah, shit's going to go wrong. I might end up on Mars instead of the moon. there's a certain amount of faith that I have that I'm going to roll with the punches until I can't, you know, until one of them gets me, you know, and that's going to be the one. And I'm not sure what the trade-off, if it's worth it or not. You know, there's this idea like, well, maybe if I had planned a little bit better, if I'd done some of the paid more attention to some of the details, I could have had 5 more adventures or 6 more adventures or something like that. Mm-hmm. But on the other side of it, I think I might get so overwhelmed with worrying about making sure I've got so many more adventures to have that I might check out of yeah. the current one. I think it's really good that you guys kind of balance each other out in that, because I'm sure you allow the other one to get the benefits of both while you take on some of the hardships of both for the other one.
I also wonder, though, if that's like just the nature of being with another person. Mm-hmm. Who would I be if I were alone? Yeah. On the show alone? No. Who would I be? Yeah, like if I didn't have Mike and if it was just me, like would I be the person who is paying the tickets because I just would have to? And is there a part of me? I actually do believe this.
No, you'd find some other boyfriend that paid tickets for you.
No, I just mean like if in theory I was just like a person who was alone and it was just me, like I'd have to assume all these responsibilities. But I do think that in being in partnership with another person, you kind of are like, whether consciously or not, letting these things, you're kind of constantly like prioritizing and able to prioritize like the things that either you're best suited to or the things that bring you most joy or whatever. And they kind of like naturally even each other out. It seems like I'm just thinking back to like different roommates I've had over the course of my whole life. And like, I've definitely been the dirtiest roommate, but I've also been like the cleanest roommate at different times and within different groups. Yeah. And you kind of, the group creates itself when everyone's there. It like the energy in the room just like shuffles around and then you kind of people assume their different roles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so like if Mike was terrible at paying tickets, I'd have to be the one that's like, okay, I'm also not a fan of this, but I guess I'll be slightly better than Mike at paying tickets. And that would probably be, so I don't know. That's my theory on that.
That works.
I don't know.
I think it's so true. Like, I mean, I think I've said this in the past. We had a past roommate, for better, for worse, you know, we have to be cognizant of the fact that we're really close as people. And this other person is always going to be the third person. And it's going to be very easy for us to see this person as the enemy, where like, you know, we see our own choices and justified when we choose not to do the dishes or take longer to do it. But whenever we see them do it, we're going to judge them much faster because they are always the third person. And that third person is always going to be the one that, and I've literally seen the dynamic shift. Whenever you and Audrey, it was Audrey, you and me were roommates. Mm-hmm. I just remember the dynamic shifting whenever I think someone left or we had a new roommate coming in. And I just remember literally seeing it happen. I perceived it as like, I was the dirty one to us, then shifting it to this new person who was like, oh, they're the dirty one now. Anyways, I totally agree that you end up complimenting.
You're the dirty one.
Yeah,
now.
You're the dirty one.
You're the dirty one now. You're the dirty one now.
So good.
Never to be seen again.
I think this is a perfect time to tell you that our final card is the Ace of Rods.
Is he holding a rhubarb?
Rhubarb,
holding
yes.
a rod.
Ace of
rhubarb. Rhubarb rod.
Yeah, Ace of Rhubarb.
Also known as the Ace of Wands. Ace of Wands is a symbol of spiritual self-realization, awakening, and it's associated with the principle of truth and authenticity. The Ace of Wands is the torch of fire, a symbol of uncontainable life force that's within. Whenever you pull this card, it's an indication that you've awakened to the uncontainable and irrepressible inherent being within.
Whoa.
Mm.
Whoa.
So we just got done categorizing who we are, which is pretty wild.
Yeah, I truly have been listening to every episode of this podcast that you've
been
doing,
Colin.
Same. I have been too.
I've been loving it. I'm like, I'm just enamored by this. And mm-hmm. I think you and Jenna were talking about, Jenna Horner, I believe, we're talking about, like, you know, what light you have inside you and, like, how much do you, you know, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine, this little light of mine, you know, how much do you let that little light shine or let it come out? And I think that was interesting in just kind of correlation to that. I really appreciated that concept of, like, at what point are you being your authentic self, which is probably as few filters as possible.
Right.
Right. And versus the part that's aware. I've always been such an aware person. I'm generally a people pleaser, caring what people think about me, wanting to make people laugh. Who knew? And
very I feel like we're both recovering people pleasers.
Yes. I mean, it's a very slow recovery for me. Look, not me. I ain't going to try to please no one.
I already did that one, Mike. It doesn't count.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that's the only other accent I know.
I do not care about pleasing anyone. I appreciate that. I mean, I like that Jenna kind of prompted me to consider the idea that I sort of had this immediate pushback on, like, or I've had this for a long time, this idea of, like, I want to get rid of all my filters. I just want to be as pure as I can be. I just want to be pure Colin all the time, mm-hmm. Which is nice, sort of. But I do like the idea that perhaps some of the filters are ways for us to try on things so that we can learn a little bit about ourselves. I learned a lot about myself being a people pleaser. You know, I learned a lot about myself. It gave me so much to reflect back on as I became more aware of that tendency that I had. And it really helped me learn about myself that there are things that the filters kind of help us hone in on parts of the pure light, you know, the mm-hmm. Realizing, like, I want to please people because I have a desire to connect. Well, that's not bad. I like that I want to connect. I like that I want to feel close to people and I want to understand them. And now I know that about myself. And I also know that I don't have to please people in order to feel close to them. You know, mm-hmm. So I appreciate her perspective on that. She kind of helped me think differently about that whole approach.
Yeah, I think there's a certain amount of being okay with your flaws, like embracing and loving yourself. It means embracing and loving your flaws too. And, like, not that it's a flaw even that I'm a people pleaser, that I am like a ham or whatever, or want attention from people. Like, I think that Pete Holmes is like a really fantastic comedian that I think is just very honest. And I've always admired his ability to be just like, yeah, I'm a fucking people pleaser. I want people to laugh. That's what I'm here for. That's what I literally, that's my profession. And like, I love that, like, ability to be honest with yourself and not just like embarrassed. Like, oh, I need affirmation from people. Is that makes me so, it's like, no, I just, that's what mm-hmm. I like and who I am. And
yeah, this is what gets me going.
Yeah, it gets me revved up.
Yeah, we were talking about this recently on, like, one of our, we walk to the park, Prospect Park, in the mornings, and it's usually like we talk in circles about everything in life.
Love it.
Usually not getting anywhere, but again,
except to the park and back.
Yeah, we get to the park and back. And then,
am I right?
There it is.
And I was like realizing how I have like a real specific vision of who I want to be, and it's very well maybe who I am anyway, but it's not how I see myself. Like, I'm like, oh, I wish I were like this bubbly, always optimistic, constantly cheery kind of, that's who I want to be. And I'm like, why is that? Why have I picked this kind of like persona as the ideal North Star. Mm. I'm sure everyone has their own version of who they wish they were, but like, I'm really curious about why. Maybe rather than that, think about the things about you that you do like and be like, oh, wow, I'm really glad to be this person too.
Yeah. That's my favorite version of this curiosity that we're talking about. All the best things that I've ever done come from that. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's great to be curious about oneself. You know, mm-hmm. it's not selfish. It's not being self-obsessed or anything. It's all we've got.
Yeah.
I came to the harsh realization a while ago that I'm never going to know anyone else fully. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm never, as hard as I try to connect, as hard as I try to like get people to be vulnerable and genuine with me. And when I say get them, I'm not trying to like coerce
be
them.
Be vulnerable.
In the next episode I'm putting out with John David Erickson, they coined this phrase, for me at least, they coined this mandatory intimacy or mandatory vulnerability. Like, I was like, yeah, I got to be aware of that. I got to make sure it's not mandatory with me.
Scary thought. Right.
Yeah. Knowing that this initial goal that I had that maybe I wasn't aware of for most of my life, which was, you know, I really want to know people. I want to know, mm-hmm. you know, the deepest depths I can get to. I'm never going to get there. The only person I have that opportunity with is myself. That's mm-hmm. the only one. And I feel as though it's now that's a major journey that I owe myself in this life, is mm-hmm. I really do want to understand as much of myself as possible.
Yeah. I think the idea of being kind to yourself is like, that's a very like, I think, mindfulness, like self-help kind of concept. But I do think it's really valid that we are kind to ourselves. And I think Tara Brach, who is like a fantastic mindfulness teacher, and yeah, and she talks about like how like, I maybe she's not the first person to talk about this, I actually don't think so, but like suffering comes from judgment. Mm-hmm. Like if you're judging a moment, that's where like suffering comes from. Obviously, like the idea of suffering in Buddhism is grasping.
But isn't everything judgment? Like that thing is wonderful. That's a judgment.
Yeah, yeah, true. I mean,
only if it's objective, I think. Mm. I think it's only judgment because, I mean, you can have, I think that there's different versions of judgment because mm-hmm. if you're saying like this thing is objectively wonderful, I feel as though that's my least favorite kind of judgment. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I'm saying, you know, I love this thing, then it's, I feel, is more stating fact then, you know, and it's not talking about the inherent quality of a thing. It's just talking about my experience of it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing I've got. And I can't stand it when people try to tell me that a thing has more value than another thing because they think it's good.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so therefore I should think that it's, you know, or worse, the other direction, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's where like, I mean, I think that something comes up in our relationship a lot. And I something I try to just be cognizant of, like, is that, you know, the idea that I'm ultimately, Katie is who she is, and I am ultimately who I am. There's beauty in that, accepting myself and accepting my flaws and who I am, and also accepting that Katie is going to be who she is and ultimately is not going to inherently change. And not only can I literally not change her, but I shouldn't want to. And I think it would be a shame if like she changed because of me, or like, even though we've already talked about, we all change because of each other and like end up complimenting each other in great ways. I think that it's like really helpful to be like realizing that if I'm imposing a judgment on her in this moment for being who she is, then I'm inflicting, you know, suffering on myself. And, you know, cause that, like, that's at the root of a lot of arguments. It's just like, why can't you just be different?
Yeah.
There was not to keep on bringing up a million other podcasts, but,
no, please,
10% happier.
Yeah. Just hop over right now. Just pause this, hop over to 10% happier.
I think you guys sent the one that you're about to talk about this episode. You sent to Audrey and me, and we both listened to it about like couples and like how to be happier within your relationship.
Oh, I don't know that I listened. I've been
I mean,
I've sent so many episodes of this podcast to various people, but the one, it was a couple weeks ago.
I thought it was really special.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't think you sent that to a lot of people. I think it was only Colin.
Oh, no, I only sent that one episode to YouTube. I just mean, like, this podcast. Let's talk about this for a long time. And instead of the thing I was
I did this. I'm sorry. Keep going. I'm sorry.
It was only
who
like
was the last time you sent them?
Shut
up. Very judgmental.
Until I truly forget. My brain is so fried.
10% happier.
Oh yes. Okay. So he was talking to a woman about how, like, I can't remember her background, but basically she was just saying, really, when you embrace a person and like who they are, it means, this is so cliche, I guess, but embracing literally everything about them, because if not, like, if they were any other way, they wouldn't be the person that you know and that you love. That just comes with accepting, not only accepting, but like loving all their flaws. Because if like all the things that you like didn't love about me that much that you wish you could adjust and change, then I'd be like a different person.
Right.
Sure.
It could be a better person, but it's just not the person that you're with. And then you'd be with them and not me.
Whoa. That's a mind fuck. Sorry, pardon my language.
I don't know. Just a thought.
It's mind blowing. Right. Like,
it's like an alternate reality would be happening. It's more like
more theoretical.
It's more like when I'm in the shower, I'm like, God, you know, Mike's always making jokes when I'm talking about serious things, and I wish he would just be serious and not be a jokester all the time. Instead, it's like I should really just appreciate this is just who Mike is.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know.
And also be
that's
like
a very sophisticated thought.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting to think about, like, you could also be fine with the fact that that it's frustrating you in that moment. The idea of rumination and like dwelling on frustration is also really something that causes suffering. You can be like, oh yeah, that was kind of frustrating, and you can accept that you get frustrated with me sometimes when I make jokes about things that when you don't want me to make jokes about things, or when you're trying to stay focused on another thing. I think that you can also be okay with that frustration.
Mm-hmm. There's many different ways to let that not be suffering. I'm just intrigued by the path of, oh, this is actually the person I married. I chose this person.
Right.
So like, therefore,
or did you?
I mean, if we're talking about free choice, I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm getting interested in that. When something comes up, if I notice that it's frustrating me, being like practicing, this is who Mike is and I love Mike.
Yeah. I just wanted to quick pause here and point out that I was so tempted to end the episode right there on that note. It's such a lovely sentiment, and it's such an important thing to hear and to remind ourselves of. This is who my partner is, this is who my friend is, this is who my family is, and I love this person, flaws and all. Katie put it so well, and I if it wasn't for the fact that the rest of the conversation is also beautiful and fun, I would have ended the episode right on that note and thought, ah, nailed it, yeah. But I can't, because the rest of this episode deserves to be heard as well. So just wanted to pause there and point out that I love that. And thank you, Katie, for that moment. Okay, back to the show. Audrey and I can't remember where we heard this, but we both recognized that it was something we wanted to try to remember. And I might not get the quote exactly right, but it was in reference to somebody who had lost someone else, and they came out of the experience thinking like, I should have been better at cherishing the times that you drove me crazy, or that you drove me mad, or whatever it was. I find myself, you know, especially in the philosophy that we find ourselves in a lot, we kind of go down this path that you guys relate more closely with Buddhism and things like that. And I find myself, a lot of my philosophies align pretty much on the same path. And some concepts there are, you know, really discourage looking back. You know, it's all about being present in the moment. You don't look forward, you don't look back. And yet, I find that in the moment when somebody that I love, when Audrey is doing something that really bothers me or that really frustrates me, in the moment I'm frustrated, and I can see the little details in it, like, mm-hmm. well, I'm frustrated because I'm thinking about what I want her to be instead of who she is and all that. Mm-hmm. That's what the frustration is, right? Mm-hmm. And yet now I can look back at times where she's frustrated me and it makes me laugh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think, oh my gosh, you know, what a nut. Yeah. And she looks back at the times that I frustrate her and she'll roll her eyes and she'll like, mm-hmm. you know, and those are joyful for me. Mm-hmm. Those are, yeah. I think that with a lot of my past relationships too. I think about the things that even led to the relationship ending. And when I look back at it now, I think those were really important things. Those were, you mm-hmm. know, I don't have frustration about them. I have sort of melancholy, but also I can laugh at those too. Mm-hmm. And so it's odd to, you know, I'm pretty much fully on board on, like, I want to be present as often as possible. I want to make sure that I'm, like, enjoying the moment. But there are times where looking back kind of brings some joy and brings mm-hmm, a little... Mm-hmm. And I think that there must be some sort of dance that we can do that marries all of those times together, like in the moment. Mm-hmm. Right now, being here with you, I'm feeling not just us talking together, but I'm also feeling like all the times we spent together. And I'm feeling all, mm-hmm. you're in your apartment. I remember sitting on that couch in your apartment, sleeping over on the air mattress. And like,
and the cap on the ground.
Yeah. And yeah, but I love that. And, you know, like having a Thanksgiving meal made by a gourmet chef, right. coming back from a long trip, coming in and like having all this food, hanging out, and just all those memories. If I hadn't just made the effort to recall specific things, they still would have been in there, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's what I'm carrying. It's like in my backpack that I carry with me as we like sit and hang out.
Yeah, I totally agree. And actually, you saying that is like so interesting, because I don't think I've really thought about it in that way, but I totally agree that reminiscing is a beautiful way to stay present with the people that you're in the room with. You're just sitting around, you're like, well, we need to make whole new memories right now, I guess. What's something that's never been said? I don't know. Obviously, you can always reference something that's happened in the past. I love that. But I think the idea of grasping is the idea of like holding on to something in the past.
Right.
Or like, man, there was nothing like those days. We got to get back to those days where we had, you know, like, and not, right. and that's making you not appreciate the present. Or no, that's clinging. Clinging to the past, or what is it? It's called grasping, or...
I didn't know that grasping and clinging were different things.
Yeah, because grasping would be the future, right?
Grasping would be the future.
Like trying to get at something you don't have, and clasping is like, I already had it, and I don't want to let go.
Yes, clinging on to the past, not letting it go, mm-hmm. ruminating on how it could have been better, those types of things. I think it's very different than like just having... good memories and
right.
Reflecting on things and celebrating the past that you can market as like part of your life and celebrate victories and celebrate beautiful moments. I think where it becomes problematic is when you're like, I'm not going to be happy until then.
Right.
And I was only happy back then.
Right.
But right now, there's no way I could be happy. and that's where it becomes like where I struggle with that a lot as well, of like, what am I working towards? I'm not going to be happy until I have a backyard and a four-room house and a place for me to do yoga and set up a recording studio and do all these things. Like, that's when I'm going to be truly happy.
Yeah.
And I look towards that, but like, how can I be happy right now? Because I am happy right now.
That is the biggest question, I feel like, constantly. When we did the tarot card reading, was that like over a year ago, maybe?
Yeah, I think so.
Same things ruminating in my, yeah. even though the tarot card reading was fabulous and I thought it clarified everything for me. it's still just like, how to be happiest. And I do wonder if, because I don't want to be like naive and think, okay, I could be happy here. I could be happy here. And then I'm like, well, is that just keeping me somewhere that I don't really want to be, just because I'm telling myself you can and you should and plenty of people are. So therefore, like, you got this. New York's amazing. So many people wish they could live here. Like, you have a cute little apartment. You can walk to the park. You can walk to, like, anything and everything you'll ever need. Cute little neighborhood. I'm like, yeah, why do I want something different? And should I listen to that? Follow that instinct? Or should I be like, no, that's just my wanting to have more. Always. That will never be satisfied.
And I think that that's where I do this categorization with stuff like this, where it's, you know, we talked about judgment, and I see the other side of that coin being curiosity. And I much prefer approaching these questions with curiosity, because I find that it's a much safer way to go. When you're sitting here thinking, you know, what do I do? Do I pursue this thought? Do I pursue this question? I think you do with curiosity, like you've done before. Mm-hmm. When you thought about moving out of the city, you started looking at options. You know, if you found an option that really sparked some excitement for you, you would do it. Like, I think, you know, whatever it is that you, whatever thing that you found that excited you enough to make you say, like, I want to do this. That's what you're looking for, right? And until you find that, it seems as though curiosity is still the safest thing, because until you find it, you don't have to act. You don't have to decide that thing. You can just keep on going in that direction. And maybe you stop looking after a while because you think, like, well, maybe this isn't what I want. And so I guess that's it. But when that comes up again, my answer is always yes, you should listen to that. And the answer is always, to me at least, once you have that thought, I think you owe it to yourself to be curious about it, and whatever it means to you to be curious, it's worth the effort to find out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's funny to, like, struggle with, well, where do we want to, like, live or whatever? Because that feels kind of like small peanuts in a way. We decided to have a child, which feels like the most upending potentially, like, decision, and it was like, okay, yeah, let's just do that. I think we're gonna do that. And then we just did that thing, and there's no going back from that. Choosing to go live a different place is like, you can also always just come back. Like, it's not a big deal.
Yeah,
right. I don't know, realizing that some of these decisions are not so, they don't need to be so big. They're only big because you tell yourself that they're big. And
well, and I think it's just another version of running into the danger, you know. Like, I don't think any of these decisions are decisions that will destroy your life, you know.
Right.
I think you guys have taken enough risks, and you've challenged yourself enough with big things that you've proven, at least if I were you, I would feel like I've proven to myself that I can handle some pretty big stuff. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think the power that you've got in the work you've done and the growth you've created for yourselves, both professionally and personally, allows for a little bit of, well, yeah, fuck it. I feel really excited about moving, so let's try it, you know? And if it doesn't work, then let's get back to where we like, you know, go back to, you know. But your run into the danger has served you well. And I don't know. And I really admire it. I feel inspired for it. It's one of the reasons why I did this. Starting this podcast, I had so many doubts, and I had so many, like, are people going to think I'm stupid for doing this? Are people going to listen to this? It was because I didn't care if they listened or if they thought it was stupid that I did it, because I thought, like, this is dangerous, and it's making me think a lot, and it's making me try really hard. And so I'm going to do it. And, you know, and I want to do that in more things in my life. And, I thank you guys for being my friends and for helping me with it. And I'm just realizing right now that we have like a minute and a half left
of
our time.
Cool. Well, that's beautiful.
But we have one more accent. We have one more accent that was promised.
That's all right. We don't need to do that.
Yeah.
That's all right. You can leave that. Yeah, in it. You don't need that at all.
In it.
Well, I think that's fine.
Perfect.
I really,
this was so fun.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so glad that we like pushed ourselves to do it.
Same. And
to get together. We should just do this more often, even without microphones. We should just
yeah
yeah
love totally. It feels like therapy, and I'm always grateful for. I was like, I've been listening to the podcast, and like, I'm so inspired by this, and I'm also like, I'm not surprised at all, because like every time I talk to Colin, this is the kind of conversations we have that you bring out some meaningful stuff, and I appreciate that, and I think everyone, all your listeners, do as well.
Yes, yes,
thank they you must. For yes. going in.
Hey, I love you, and I really appreciate you, and I can't wait for the next time we get to hang out, but I'm super satisfied with what we just got.
Same.
Amazing. Feel free to edit any and all of it out. We love you so
much. Edit it all out. Just start from the beginning. Delete, delete, delete. Love you.
Apple A, Apple Z, three, Apple delete.
Two,
one.
Wait, it didn't stop.
Wait.
Oh, wow. They're still here?
What if they hold it hostage? What if this program, what if Riverside is just like, listen, you kept recording and for $9.99 a month.
I bet so.
No, they're charging you by the minute right now, probably.
Yeah. You gave me your credit card number, right?
Oh, shit.
Yeah. No, I bet it really will.
It's Audrey's. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
It's coming out of the furniture savings account.
The furniture account. Yeah, we actually had a Riverside.
Yeah, you should have a recording yeah, right. savings account portion.
I love you guys.
Love you.
Me too.
And one of these days, I'm gonna like save up enough to ask for design work from Gander for this. I think I like what I did, but I feel like it could be so much better. So.
I think we could work out a trade, perhaps.
Ooh, yeah. Do a trade, yeah.
Yeah, I'm in the market for some goat milk, if you know a guy. I'm open to it. They don't have that unpasteurized good up here, so.
Okay, I'll talk to my goat milk guy.
Yeah, I know the Gainesville Farmers Market's got some.
Good goat.
Like I heard it's like really easy to ship too, so
yeah. Just put in a Ziploc bag and off you go.
Honestly, you had to send a goat.
They send the goat, you milk it, you send the goat back. It's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
Oh, yeah, goat loans.
Oh, I never thought about that.
Oh shit, dog, that's the idea. It's the goat loans.
Number six, we got a bonus episode.
That's actually Johnny from episode one.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, we love you so much.
Have a lovely weekend.
Yeah, you too. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Sounds good.
Bye.
Well, I think I'm going to just go back to the beginning and start all over again. That was so much fun to listen to. And I was the one who was in the conversation, so I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Thank you so much, Katie and Mike, for sharing your time with us, your wisdom, your kindness, your laughter, all of it. I loved it. I will remember goat loans for the rest of my life, and I hope I get to reminisce with you about it real soon. Thank you for finding your way here today. Thank you for supporting this podcast. It's really important to me, and the fact that you're listening means that you're helping me do something that feels really important. So thank you. I hope you have a wonderful day, a wonderful week, wonderful month. Join us next week. Our guest is Jacob Adams, who has recently put out an amazing EP for his band Vim, which I get to play with. And I highly recommend you join us for our conversation about our vulnerabilities and our loves and our excitement and everything in between. Thank you, Crooked Path Forge, for sponsoring this episode. Please visit crookedpathforge.org. Use promo code FINDAHAMMER to get 10% off your purchases. Well, I'm still haven't figured out like the end thing. Like what's the little phrase that's going to be associated with find a way? Like hip hip hooray, ollie ollie oxen free. I don't know. We'll get there. Maybe next year. Love you. Thank you.